At one point in a National Geographic documentary about world-famous chimpanzee expert Jane Goodall, we see delightful film of her as a child, dressing her dog for tea, setting up her stuffed animals on the lawn, daydreaming about going to Africa to be with real animals and Tarzan. Instead, she became Jane, a superstar still in her 20s, interviewed often about the dangerousness of living with chimpanzees.
Sometimes I was frightened, especially of things like leopards. But it was the kind of life I'd always dreamed of myself living. And it was so fascinating that nothing could deter me.
The film, with a score from Philip Glass, directed by Brett Morgan, is nominated for 7 Emmy Awards and is available on DVD and through Sunday, streamed free through the National Geographic website. We'll link you at herenow.org. And it's thrilling in that it includes recently discovered footage of Goodall as the 26-year-old former waitress and secretary to researcher Louis Leakey, who picked her to go to the Gombe Wilderness in Tanzania to study chimpanzees, precisely because she hadn't gone to university, didn't know anything about the subject, and so might have an open mind, which she soon used to upend the scientific world's accepted thinking that animals are not capable of rational thought when she saw that, in fact, chimpanzees use tools. The film is called Jane. To many of us, she is, just like Cher, a single-named heroine, and Jane Goodall joins us now. Welcome back.
Hello. Well, lovely speaking with you.
To see you in this early, recently discovered footage, so young, so sure of yourself, what was it like for you to see that footage?
First of all, I think that Brett Morgan has done an incredible job. He's produced a documentary which, out of all those I've seen of me and the chimps, this is the only one that actually takes me right back into the skin of my 26-year-old self. Yeah. It's a feeling of attaining a dream, but also the sense of despair that I sometimes felt because the chimps were just running away from me. And then feelings of great excitement when I saw the first chimp to lose his fear, David Greybeard, not only using twigs to fish termites from their nest, but actually making tools by stripping leaves and side branches.
Few people had even seen them, as you point out, just a couple researchers, and one was sort of a crazy guy who covered himself in baboon poop. What was it like when you first saw this community?
Well, it took a long time, yeah. You know, because they'd never seen a white ape before, and we are the fifth ape, actually. So it was gradual. It was getting to learn one member and then another and then another until gradually I realized these amazing beings live in communities, and gradually learning they all had their own personalities and that they had strong family bonds. I mean, the whole thing was a gradual unfolding, and the more it unfolded, the more fascinating it became.
Oh, I mean, the more we see their human characteristics. Talk about this footage shot by a man who joined you after some of your discoveries. It was thought, well, maybe we ought to send a photographer there. She seems to be doing okay. And this was Dutch filmmaker Hugo van Lawick. What we're seeing through his footage is not only you falling in love with the chimpanzees, but you and he falling in love with each other. So there are two love stories here, you know, you and the chimps and you and your first husband. Then a third love entered for each of you. He was becoming one of the great nature photographers. He needed to be in the Serengeti. He wanted you there with him. You knew you had to be with the chimpanzees. Was that difficult for you to watch that story unfold?
Well, it was, you know, even at the time, it was very sad. Yeah. But there was nothing we seemed able to do to make it work. And it was particularly sad for our son. But we made the best of it, and Hugo and I stayed friends. So I think the outcome was the only thing that could have happened.
Yeah. Well, but what we're watching is not just how difficult it is for people who have passions to follow that passion, but for a woman to want to put her work first, especially in the 60s, 70s.
Well, you know, most women weren't even thinking in terms of careers. So you did something for a little while, and then you got married and raised a family. And so I was trying to do it all.
Well, it also seems that you were learning a lot about parenting from the chimpanzees, one in particular, Flo. You watched her have her baby, Flint. You had your son, you know, after that. As Flint grows older, you watch, he's unable to detach from her. It's so painful. After that is when you send your son back to school in England with your mom. It's almost like you were watching a young chimp not able to separate from a mother, and you knew you had to teach your son how to.
It sometimes sounds a bit brutal, sending him off to England. Well, I sent him off to my family because I'd been homeschooling him and I couldn't go on doing that. What I learned from Flo was the importance of supporting your child. Even if your baby had a fight with an infant whose mother was dominant, your mother, if she's supportive, will rush in to help you, even though she knows she's going to get beaten up. And that's what my mother did for me when I had this dream of Africa. She was the only one who supported me. Everybody else laughed and said, get real, dream about something you can achieve. Mm. You'll never get to Africa. It's far away. And you're only a girl.
Mm. Flo also seems to teach you about dying. It's heartbreaking, but we see she's died crossing a stream. She's elderly. The little son... It's a heartbreaking point in the film, but you comment on that you kind of learn from her what you want, to be allowed to just go when you are too old to carry on.
Well, I think when you live out in the wild, whether you're studying chimpanzees, birds or anything, birth and death become a part of the natural order of things. And then the terrible polio epidemic, truly heartbreaking.
Polio brought by humans to another part of Africa, infecting these animals. Oh, and to see them dragging limbs, terrible.
It was awful. And the thing is that chimps are so like us, biologically as well as behaviorally, that they can catch all our known human contagious diseases.
Well, this, in fact, changes the way people can research chimpanzees, because back in the day when you first started, you could be hugging them, you could be grooming them, let them groom you. And yet, do I understand that's not allowed now?
No, because we now know so much more about, you know, the danger that humans pose, and we don't allow people to get too close, although you can't stop the chimps coming up and the babies wanting to touch people, and the males sometimes giving you a swipe as they display past.
Yeah.
So, but we do our best. And I'm just glad that at the time when I went out, none of this was known. And it was very common for scientists at the beginning of studying primates to set up feeding stations.
This was when you noticed that a chimp would come and take a banana from your tent. So the idea was, well, maybe we have bananas here for them, again, to try to get a closeness. But they became crazed then for the bananas. They trashed the camp. Let's just listen to a little bit of the sound. I mean, this was really hard to watch, Jane Goodall. I mean, it was frightening. You had to take refuge. It's part of your learning curve. You know, how do we do this so that it's safe for them, safe for us? Did you ever question, what am I doing? I've entered their world to study it, but I've altered it.
Not really. Of course, there's criticism of this. But I was always, from the very beginning, interested not so much in the natural behavior, how far do they travel, and so on. I was interested in the difference between individuals. And within this setting, one, the bananas enabled Hugo to get the pictures, which kept the National Geographic interested, so they kept on funding it. Secondly, within that setting, it was possible to observe the differences in the way that the different individuals interacted with each other and coped with this situation.
And that scene with the bananas, you know, reminds us, as does another one I want to listen to a little bit, you know, that these are animals, as someone said, that can rip your face off if they wanted to. After a group of the chimps decides to move to another area, suddenly there's just civil war as the first group attacks them. Let's just listen to a little bit.
The entire community that moved south was annihilated.
It seems like at this point you realize they're all too human.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I thought they were like us, but nicer. And then when that, what amounted to primitive war, it shocked me, showing they too have a dark and brutal side.
Jane Goodall, you are 84, going strong?
Well, I'm 300 days a year on the road. I'm talking about what we're doing to our planet, how we're destroying the forests, we're polluting the ocean and the air and the rivers. I have to work with young people today so that we try and raise new generations to look after this poor old planet better than we have before it's too late.
That's Jane Goodall, the focus of the National Geographic documentary, Jane. Jane Goodall, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, lovely talking to you. Thank you.
Ah, to see her in this newly discovered footage at 26, marching off into the jungle with just her Converse sneakers and shorts. She says she knew part of the interest in her was in her long legs, and that was sexist, but she used it for all it was worth to get attention and funding. Starting tonight through Sunday, the documentary Jane will be streamed free through the National Geographic website. We will link you up at hereandnow.org.